Hi, friends. Before we get started, I just want to remind you, if you're a fan of the show and you enjoy listening, if you could just take a minute and rate and review the show however you listen on whatever podcast app, it would mean so incredibly much. And if you do so, feel free to send me a DM over on Instagram at plusmommy so I can personally thank you. That's how much it means to me. Like, I want to be able to thank you directly for taking a minute to review the show because it helps other people. It raises the elevation of the show and other people find it and tune in. So it helps to grow our amazing community. All right. Well, before we dive right in to Sarah's plus size pregnancy, birth story with twins, and a vaginal birth story with twins, it's incredible. I want to do a brief content warning. Sarah talks about struggles that she's had with her body and weight and food and how that kind of played out throughout her pregnancy. I think it's great information that helps anyone be prepared who has maybe struggled with some disordered eating and then has to have their nutrition looked at very closely during pregnancy because Sarah encouraged gestational diabetes. So she talks openly about it. I think it's really helpful, but I also think and know that it could be triggering for some. So as always, I just wanted to put a little content warning there. But if you're ready, here we go. Hi, friends, and welcome to the Plus Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jen McClellan, and here we explore plus-size pregnancy, motherhood, and body love. From bumps to bellies, we talk about it all. Now, let's get started. Hi, friends. Today we are joined by Sarah, and she is going to tell us her twins' birth story. And this is a vaginal birth story with twins, which I'm just so thrilled to hear. We haven't had a full story. We had a birth story where someone gave birth to one of the twins and then had a cesarean birth with the second. So I'm really looking forward to hearing Sarah's story. And we are also joined, if you hear little noises in the background, we are joined by one of her lovely twins that has woken up from a nap. So just to let you know what that adorable noise is in the background. So welcome to the show, Sarah.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Well, I would love to hear your journey to getting pregnant with twins. Was this a surprise or were you planning or fertility journey? Tell us everything.
Well, the twins was definitely a surprise, but we had been trying for about 2 years to be getting pregnant, and we didn't try any fertility until like the very end of that 2 years. We did Clomid.
Yeah.
And we only had to do 3 rounds of Clomid, thankfully, before we were able to get pregnant with the girls.
But 2 years, I'm sure that felt like an eternity as well. I mean, that's a long time to be trying.
Yeah, it is a long time to be trying, I guess. I know quite a few people who had to try for that long. So kind of in my head, it seems, I guess, a little more normal. And also I anticipated it since I have PCOS. I thought, you know, there's a very real chance I could have issues. You know, of course, it's not guaranteed. But, you know, I wanted to be realistic. And I guess that's why I was a little slower to actually try maybe fertility treatments. My OBGYN just kept trying, you know, offering to say, well, let's try to get your menstrual cycle regulated first. And I was in agreement. She always gave me the option to be like, well, if you want to do something more progressive faster, we can. But I thought, you know, I'm not in a real rush or anything. So let's just see.
Yeah, I love your approach to it where you weren't like, you know, like we hear so many different people's experiences with fertility and that you were like, no, I kind of expected it to be this long and you wanted to take your own path through your fertility journey. So I think that's great. I think it's good to hear a variation of people's experiences. So thank you. Thank you for sharing that and how you were feeling during that experience.
Yeah, no problem. And I think it was important too that I had a supportive doctor, and that was something that I was very upfront with my doctor about when I was finding a new gynecologist, that I really wanted to spill out, you know, their opinions.
While you're with your daughter, I'll say that PCOS is polycystic ovarian syndrome, and we talk about it a lot on the show. So I'll put links in the show notes over at plusmommy.com on more information about PCOS and interviews we've had with experts. But it can definitely impact fertility in a few different ways. And one of those ways is having irregular menstrual cycles or not ovulating, which is why Sarah's care provider wanted to focus on helping her to have regular ovulation.
Yes, exactly. And honestly, that was my problem, we found out. You know, I had been testing to see if I could, you know, to track my ovulation. That's what my doctor really wanted me to focus on too. And I never got like a peak until my third round of Clomid.
Wow.
And so that was like really weird for me, like, you know, to see a positive of something and then to then take a pregnancy test and get a positive. I was like, I never thought it would happen. I just always was ready for a negative, I guess, to kind of protect myself.
Yeah. No, that makes so much sense. And then it's a positive with twins.
Oh, yeah. So that was a whole other shock. And I will say, of course, Clomid does, you know, increase the chances of twins, but also runs on my mother's side of the family, which, of course, is a side that matters. And my great aunt had fraternal twins instead of my great great grandmother.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're not really 100% sure. It could have been a combination of everything.
Totally. Yes. What was that like going in for, you know, those early prenatal visits? And when did you find out that it was twins?
I didn't have my first visit until 8 weeks. And, you know, so of course, until then, I had no idea it was twins. And, you know, of course, those early weeks, you're just like a little, or I was anxious, you know.
Totally, yeah.
To make sure everything was good. Was I crazy? Was, you know, it a false alarm? And I had called and tried to get like a blood test done, and they didn't want to do a blood test because they said I had no like reason to need one medically because I didn't have any like previous, you know, losses or anything regarding that I would need one necessarily. So, you know, just waiting for that. But leading up to it, I actually had dreams of twins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I kept telling my husband, I'm like, what if we have twins? And literally on the car ride there, I brought it up again. And I was like, what if we have twins? Like, really? What if we have twins? And he was like, we're not going to have twins. Don't worry. And so when we were in the ultrasound, she was really quiet. And of course, we had never done this before. And I was a little like, no, was something wrong? Because I didn't know what I was looking at.
Yeah.
And she was like, did you order two? And I just looked at my husband. I was like, I told you so. And he was so shocked. And yeah, so it was really exciting, but also a little scary.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, but luckily, well, fortunately, we had die twins, which just meant that they both had their own placentas and their own gestational sacs. So it's known as the safest type of twin pregnancy. And so that was reassuring to hear, you know, that even though I was going to be high risk right away, that, you know, it was the best situation for twins possible.
Yeah.
So that first appointment was like a whirlwind. I'm sure it is normally, even if you just have, you know, one baby, but yes. With the two, we found out all that information. And then of course, I'm like a researcher. So then I just started researching like hardcore. And, you know, it was just a little nerve wracking too, because it just added that extra layer of like, oh no.
Totally.
You know, you have to do things differently. But again, it was my first pregnancy, so I didn't know any different either, because a lot of people bring that up. And they're like, oh, I can't imagine. Like, what does it feel like? And I'm like, I don't know. What does it feel like to just have one baby?
Yeah, you're like, this is my only experience. This is all I know. So that's your normal. And that's incredible. With those first few visits with your OB, obviously they're, you know, telling you everything with twins, but did they bring up anything about being plus size and pregnant with twins?
No, thankfully. I mean, I did ask about it just because I find that for me, I like to just bring it up on my own terms.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, just so that I can, not like I feel like it's like an elephant in the room if I don't bring it up, but they just, just not dismissed it, but just said like, no, that has no concern here. The concern is just, you're being you have to go to maternal fetal because you have twins. Like regardless of your size, you would have to go there
Yeah.
anyways. And so that was really, really comforting. And also because then you start seeing other doctors, right? So I was comfortable with my OB that I, like I said, I had kind of interviewed and figured out before I went on this journey with her.
Yeah.
But then you have to see everyone in the office. And so I was really anxious about that. But every single provider I saw and the nurses never mentioned it. And anytime I would bring up my weight, mainly because I was losing weight and then I didn't really gain much at all. They always just were like, no, that's not important. If what's important is if you're doing well and if the babies are growing well, which they are, so we don't need to focus on that. And I know that's not everyone's experience, so I was very fortunate to have that, and I'm very thankful because, of course,
Yeah.
going into it, that's one thing I was nervous about, especially when you go to doctors, throughout my life. And I go in for strep throat and they mention, oh, you could lose some weight. And I'm just like, what does this have to do? And so obviously I knew pregnancy had to do with it. So I'm glad though that they just treated me, I felt like, as if, just like anyone, it wasn't specifically something different because of, being plus size.
That's wonderful. I'm really glad that you had a positive experience. You had enough on your plate, right? Another to also be made to feel like this is such a concern, but the concern is that your overall health and the baby's overall health, which that's what it should be. And what did they tell you about not gaining weight? Because we know here on the show, and we talk about it, that it's not uncommon for plus size people not to gain a lot of weight during pregnancy for a variety of reasons, but including if some, habits are changed and you're maybe being a little different with your nutrition and physical activity. But with twins, I can only imagine how everything online you're reading is a lot of it is related to weight gain too. So for you not to gain weight, what was that like for you emotionally too?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I guess I kept bringing it up. Like you said, all the books and everything told you basically that the expectation is to gain like 20 to 30 pounds. Like that's normal for a twin pregnancy. And I was like, okay. And so, of course, I had a lot of motion sickness for basically the first like 20 weeks. I had a hard time. I was still able to eat, thankfully, and everything, but I did lose weight just because, like you said, I wasn't eating as much, or when I was, my body was just craving like different things, how it craves nutrients that you need at the time. And I was just like really into fruit, like nonstop, which I like fruit normally, but I don't normally like it that much.
That's great, though.
So, all my research was telling me I needed to be gaining weight. And then every time I would go, I'd be losing weight. And I was like, is this okay? And the nurse was always like, oh, yeah, it's totally fine. Like, it's not a big deal. And then they were like, the babies are growing well. Every time they just kept coming back to that and reassuring me.
Good.
So that was nice. And then, towards the end of my pregnancy, I was starting to gain a little bit, which made me feel, a little better. So I was like, okay, good. But then I would lose weight too sometimes because, you're going so often, they weigh you and like, you fluctuate a lot. So you go from, only weighing every month you go to the appointment to then all of a sudden I was going like 3 or 4 times a week at the end. So it was just a lot more weighing, and so it would fluctuate a lot. And I was like, oh, is it okay that I lost like 2 pounds? And they're like, oh yeah. So I will say that like I was more focused on the weight, and not in necessarily like a negative way, But just because you said, like, that's the expectation for twin pregnancies.
Yeah.
And I guess pregnancy in general. And I know everybody is different, of course. And that's something, thankfully, I have overcome in my life, that, like, weight is not a huge thing for me. Like, I can look at the scale and it's okay. But I do know for a lot of people that, you know, that's not the case. So I would just say that, you know, if you do happen to have maybe a provider that is focusing on that more, to just remind yourself that if you're healthy, you know, despite the number on the scale, like, you know, everything's coming back the way it should be for your pregnancy, and what you've researched on your own. And if your baby's growing healthily, you know, to just take that with a grain of salt if people are mentioning it, you know.
Thank you for sharing that, Sarah. And I totally echo that and agree. Is they're looking for, you know, the growth of your babies or the baby. And a lot of that is measured by on your belly with your fundal height measurement. And when we go into pregnancy already having a belly, we have our own unique curve. And they're just making sure that you're still, that curve is growing and on a pace that is good for you. So yeah, losing or gaining a pound or two isn't a great concern. If there was a huge drop or a huge gain, then that could be an indicator of something else. So that's a reason why they might want to ask you to weigh each time, which I know for some people can also be triggering. So having that conversation too with your care provider of, do you really need me to weigh at every single visit? So I'm glad for you as a plus size woman, though, it wasn't difficult to have to be on the scale so often, but I know for some people it is. So thank you for sharing that experience. What was it like seeing your body and your belly change?
I guess it was kind of exciting for me, in the sense that, you know, I wasn't sure how I would look pregnant. We know that, you know, everybody's body looks different, and that pregnancy doesn't look the way it's always portrayed. And that we're all beautiful during it. But, you know, of course, I didn't know. And I would say that I did have a B belly, but it was one that, like, you only really saw if I, you know, wasn't wearing clothes.
Yeah.
You know? If I was just in my, like, regular attire, which, like, leggings and a t-shirt, I looked, you know, not necessarily like I had a B belly. I looked pregnant, though, which was something that, I guess, if anything, I was a little bit, you know, conscious about and a little bit anxious about, was if I looked pregnant. Like, I kept asking my husband, I'm like, do I look pregnant though? And I think it was more just, I wanted to look pregnant, you know?
Yes, that's so relatable.
And I'm sure that's something that a lot of people, you know, feel.
Yes, absolutely. And for anyone like, wait, B-belly, what is Sarah saying? It's not uncommon when you are having a plus size pregnancy, if you stand to the side, if your belly looks more like a B than that D shape that we see so often portrayed as, like, what pregnancy look like, which pregnancy comes in all different shapes, sizes, colors, abilities, marks. Like, pregnancy is so not just one look. But a B belly is quite common, and that's something that hasn't been talked about for so long, up until, you know, in recent years. We've more so, like, the hashtag B belly is common now on Instagram. There's, like, thousands of photos attached to it. And I think it's so beautiful and encouraging to normalize, because otherwise you're like feeling self-conscious about it, as opposed to just celebrating, hey, like, I'm growing with Sarah babies inside of this body, like B, D, C, E, F, G, there's a baby and my body is magnificent. So just holding on to that truth, and then knowing that B bellies are pretty common.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what also helped me is not only the fact that it is more visible, like you were just talking about, but also I had a friend who's also plus size, and she was pregnant at the same time as me. Yeah. And so that was really special. And she also, you know, had a B belly to a certain extent. And so we were able to, you know, talk about that and our experiences along the way. She was about 4 months ahead of me, but still, it was nice to have a personal connection. And so that's why I think things like this podcast are so great, because even if you don't have that personally, you can find it online, which I think is important.
Oh, so much. And that's wonderful that you had a friend to go through that experience with. What about your journey finding maternity clothes? What for you was kind of those staples in your closet?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure we all can relate, or if you've gone through this before, you can relate. But yeah, I had a really hard time finding maternity clothes. Like, I tried about maybe 15 pairs of maternity jeans, and I just ended up just giving them all back, like I returning them. And I didn't feel confident in them. And they just, I was just like, it's not even worth it. Like, why do I need to wear jeans? And I guess I thought it was just something that, like, a lot of people were like, oh, I love my maternity jeans or whatever. It makes me feel, you know, normal or like myself. But yeah, that was not successful for me. So I mainly just adapted my wardrobe. I had a lot of like high-waisted midi skirts and like midi dresses already.
Yeah.
So thankfully that was really easy to adapt to pregnancy for most of it. The last trimester, however, I ended up just pretty much wearing maternity leggings, which I found really good luck with Fabletics.
Oh, great.
Maternity leggings. Really, really like those. I know people like other ones, but I already had Fabletics prior to, and I liked the way they stayed on me. They didn't slide down. And so they have maternity. So I just tried them and I really, really liked them. So that's where I found the best maternity clothes. And then again, I just sized up for a few items. Like for my maternity pictures, I got a midi dress from Old Navy and I just sized up. And it still fits me. I just like wear a belt or like tie it with a sash or something to, you know, cinch my waist a little bit more.
And everyone will have to go to the show notes over at plusmommy.com because your pictures are so beautiful. So I encourage people to look. But yeah, and also like you can wear your clothes, maternity clothes or regular clothes that you sized up well beyond pregnancy. And I love that you gave the example of using a belt or a sash, because investing in more clothes during pregnancy just to wear them during a short time, you know, you can wear them much longer. So no worries there.
Yes, exactly. And especially if you do like go with either what you already have or, you know, something like we talked about that is adaptable for afterwards. I also really liked, I got a latched mama dress at the end of pregnancy. And I still wear it. And so I really liked that. You can wear it during maternity, but you can also, of course, wear it after. So I really like that company too.
Thank you for those suggestions. I'll also put those in the show notes. So how did your pregnancy progress health-wise?
Fortunately, for the most part, I had a very healthy pregnancy, especially a twin pregnancy. The only main concern was I did eventually get diagnosed with gestational diabetes. They originally tested me at about 16 weeks, just mainly due to the fact that I had an elevated A1C level just prior to getting pregnant, and also the fact that I have PCOS.
Yeah, you read my mind. I was thinking we got to point out that there is that correlation of how PCOS impacts insulin, and we see higher rates of gestational diabetes with people who have PCOS. But I feel like that's not common knowledge, and people just beat themselves up, which we're like, it's not your fault. Like, you didn't do anything. Developing gestational diabetes is not a moral failing in any way whatsoever. It's just something we need to pay attention to for the overall health of your babies and yourself, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say I passed that one, the early one, so thankfully. But when they checked me again, like everyone at around 20 weeks, I think I was, I unfortunately didn't pass. And they let me try it one more time because I was like right on the cusp, but I still didn't. And it turned out it was just my fasting level. So the entire time they were treating me, all of my, you know, after meal readings for my blood sugar came back within the normal range. but my fasting level was the issue. So I was already on metformin prior to getting pregnant due to insulin resistant with PCOS, like you mentioned. And so I just asked my provider if I could go back on it because I read that it was considered safe during pregnancy and that actually a lot of people continue taking it and they actually see lower levels of gestational diabetes. So I was a little mad that I didn't ask about it earlier because they had asked me to stop taking it. And, but they were fine with me going back on it. And that helped with my fasting levels. And eventually I did have to keep increasing it. And I had to add in a second medication towards the very end. But overall, you know, for me, taking the medication wasn't a big deal because it made less pressure on me. Yeah, so the eating was something that I was definitely a little concerned about when I found out that I got gestational diabetes, just because with diet culture and everything growing up, that was something that I had a hard time with when I like try to control what I'm eating and like actually think about it. It, you know, makes me want to eat everything that I shouldn't, you know, quote unquote, be eating. And after, you know, advocating for myself and getting on the medicine, it made me feel a lot more relaxed that if, you know, I slipped up and maybe, you know, had a little bit more of carbs than was on my target area, that it wasn't the end of the day, which made me feel a lot more like myself. And I will say that I actually was really fortunate as well for the dietitian that I saw for my gestational diabetes.
Great.
And I was really nervous for this, again, because the whole eating thing is a big issue for me. And the main thing they talked about was just pairing carbs with fat and protein, which going into the meeting with the dietitian, I had already done my own research on, like, you know, plus size positive people who worked with gestational diabetes, and that made me feel a little more confident. But it was nice having that backed up in person, and to me that felt really manageable, and it was less like me trying to think, oh, I shouldn't have carbs, and it was more like, okay, if I'm going to, you know, have a bagel, I'm just going to make sure I have cream cheese with it. And I'm also going to have maybe a meat stick, you know, at the same time or something. And just making conscious decision to pair those things. And for me, that was really nice that I had a positive experience with that as well.
I love that you shared all of that, because so often we're like, oh, well, if you get, you know, your levels aren't too high with gestational diabetes, we'll start with managing your nutrition. And for many people, they're like, oh, well, great, I want to avoid medication, but you need to be hyper-focused on your nutrition, which was clearly a trigger for you. And I really appreciate you sharing that, because I don't think we talk about that often enough, that you have options and you advocated for medicine because it was the right fit for you. And I can only imagine, like, if you were so anxious and hyper-focused on nutrition the entire time, what that would have done to your anxiety, your stress level, that would have increased cortisol levels, which is not good during pregnancy. So that's fantastic. But then also working with a nutritionist who didn't make you feel like, oh, I'm going to harp on everything you eat and all that, but just be like, hey, here are some tactics for actually eating more that not only will help with your blood sugar levels, but will help you feel better too after you eat. And I think, like, we looking at nutrition as like, it's not dieting, right? It's not everything. Yeah. So many of us were focused on for most of our lives, but pregnancy is this time not to diet, but to look at nutrition in a whole different way that is actually, you know, a healthy way to look at food. So I thank you for all that you shared. And I really encourage people often to work with a nutritionist. And so many people are like, I don't want to do that. But so often when we hear stories from people that do, it is a very positive experience. And you learn tactics for nutrition that not only benefit you during pregnancy, but benefit you with how you feed your children and how you feed yourself going on, you know, throughout life too. And I think that that is absolutely fantastic to move away from diet culture
and just look at food as nourishment and even medicine too, and helping to regulate our blood sugar and so many other aspects of our overall wellness.
Yes, exactly. And I will say, even the doctors, so I mainly discuss my gestational diabetes with my maternal fetal medicine doctors, yeah, which were essentially like the girls' doctors during my pregnancy. They focused on them, if you're not familiar with maternal fetal medicine. And the reason for that is that, like you mentioned before, gestational diabetes can really impact your baby if it is out of control and unmanaged. But they were very understanding, and like, you know, if I came in with like maybe a couple high fasting numbers and I like was able to be like, well, you know, I went to Cracker Barrel and I had like 6 biscuits and I didn't have a lot of protein with it and all that, you know, and they weren't like, oh, well, you shouldn't do that. And they were like, well, I understand. I like a good biscuit too. You know, they were very like, it's okay. You know, it's not the end of the world. And, you know, I was almost like trying to defend myself before I really needed to.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was very fortunate with my whole experience with doctors and nurses and like the nutritionist. And I'm just very thankful for that.
But that's how it should be, right? Like we're not children. We shouldn't be reprimanded for what we eat. We could be guided and, hey, here are these suggestions, like they said, to add some protein and fat with carbs. So, you know, it helps you to not crash after eating a bunch of carbs. Like, that's fine. But also to be like, hey, biscuits, they're delicious. And sometimes we just need a basket full of biscuits and get on with our day. So, but when we're reprimanded and made to feel bad, I don't know about you, but that just makes me want to go off and binge in ways, yeah, that overall just make me feel not as good, as opposed to people being like, yeah, that's, sometimes we just love biscuits and there's nothing wrong with that. Now, if we're eating biscuits, a bag, basket full of biscuit every single day, let's talk about what that looks like. But again, not shaming someone, but just talking through different ways to approach nutrition. So thank you for sharing all of that. I think it's so reassuring for people to know that we do have so many care providers and nutritionists out there that want to help us. And that's really their job, not to shame us, but mm-hmm. to help and support us. So thank you.
Yeah, exactly. And the only last thing I have to say about like that kind of subject as well is, yeah, that I also see a therapist, and I know that's maybe not everyone is at that level yet or comfortable, but I found it really helpful, especially during that diagnosis of gestational diabetes, that I was able to talk through my anxieties regarding it and the food process with her. And I think that combination also really helps. So I would encourage people to also look into that as well.
That is fantastic. I applaud you for doing that and being proactive, right? It's not just our physical health during pregnancy and life, it's our mental health too that we need, yeah, to talk about. And I'm so glad that you shared that. It is so important, and especially with a new diagnosis, to feel supported in that journey and getting tips and tools for working through those moments of anxiety as well. So I'm proud of you. That's a big step you took, and that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Are you plus size and pregnant or trying to conceive? Do you wonder where you can find cute plus size maternity clothes, or when you'll start showing and how to embrace your pregnant body? What about having a healthy pregnancy and how to reduce your increased risk? Find the answers to these questions and so much more within the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook. From nutrition and physical activity to prenatal care expectations and the importance of hiring a size-friendly care provider, you'll not only learn information to help you make informed decisions throughout your pregnancy, but start to develop a new relationship with your body. Download this guide and start using it at any point in your pregnancy. Stop Googling and start feeling empowered today. Use code PLUSMOMMY to get 20% off the My Plus Size Pregnancy Guide and audiobook.
So How about nearing the end of pregnancy? We know it's common that they're going to start talking about induction or scheduled cesarean. What were some of those conversations like? And did you know early on that you really wanted to have a vaginal birth with your babies?
Yes. So, I mean, even before I found out I was having twins, that's always something I really wanted. Of course, all birth is valid and, you know, we're all amazing no matter how it happens. But just for me, that was something I just really wanted to at least try. You know, I wanted it to be safe, of course, but I wanted to try. My mom wasn't able to have me vaginally. She had to have a C-section. And, you know, it was just always something I was a little worried about too. I just don't really like the idea of surgery. I'm sure not many people do, but yeah, vaginal was something I really wanted. So I talked with my providers about it from the beginning, especially after finding out twins. And really the only time they mentioned a C-section was just telling me that with twins, there are a few scenarios where that is what they would do. And mainly just the positions of the babies, or of course, if it's an emergency and they're in distress or anything at some point in the pregnancy. But yeah, from the very beginning, they just told me that if they are both, you know, head down, then, you know, I'm good to go for a vaginal delivery, especially since I was able to be so healthy with my blood pressure and everything throughout the pregnancy. That wasn't a concern for them. And fortunately, I even had one provider who was my original OB who would deliver baby B breech, even if, you know, that was the case. And so that was something that also really encouraged me because I felt like, okay, well, at least it's not a guarantee if for some reason, you know, she didn't cooperate and wasn't in the correct position, which at the end there, she was definitely doing a lot of flips. And so we were all a little bit like, okay, what's happening? And the other thing they told me, like, they really don't make that decision until, you know, like you're giving birth, which I'm sure the other twin mom you talked to that ended up having to have both a cesarean and a vaginal delivery, I'm sure maybe that was the case for her as well. Mm-hmm. But basically, they were like, after you deliver baby A, we will do a quick ultrasound and see what position baby B is in. Because even if they were head down, they could have flipped in that process or, you know, vice versa. And so that was a little also nerve-wracking because I like to plan.
Yeah.
But ultimately, everyone was really supportive. And, you know, they told me that there was no reason I should have to have a cesarean, just like automatically. Which I know a lot of twins are delivered that way and are planned that way. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it does have to do with the type of twin. So like I said, I had a dye pregnancy with their own, you know, placentas and gestational sacs. And so that makes it a lot less chance of like cords being tangled up and all of that, which can make a vaginal delivery sometimes extra dangerous for twins. So I had that on my side as well.
So bring us to the time. How far along were you? Did you go into labor on your own or were you induced?
Yeah, actually, I had to be induced at 38 weeks, which is like as far as my doctors were comfortable allowing twins to go. And some doctors, it's 37 weeks. Some doctors, it's 39. And like I said, it also depends on the type of twins. But I was hoping that I would go into labor spontaneously, like right before. I didn't want to go too soon, of course.
Yeah.
But of course, since I wanted a vaginal delivery, I was, you know, aware of the facts that sometimes being induced can lead to more interventions, which can lead to a cesarean. Mm-hmm. So I was a little conscious of that. But, you know, didn't happen. So I went in and they gave me Cervidil overnight, which was my least favorite part of giving birth, I will have to say. Mm-hmm. And my nurse kept laughing about that because she was like, I can't believe that's your least favorite part, but really painful for me. And I guess, you know, I was not dilated or effaced at all.
Wow.
So it was, you know, and if you don't know about Cervidil, they basically insert it behind your cervix. And it's like a plastic strip that has a string like a tampon. And you can just imagine how wonderful that feels. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first night I felt like it was like slipping out, but I didn't want them to have to push it back in. So I didn't say anything, which in hindsight, I kind of wish I had said something because they think it did slip. And unfortunately, even after the 12 hours of that, and then they had me on Pitocin the whole like morning and afternoon till about 4 p.m. And I still was 0 centimeters dilated and 0% of face.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, I had been having contractions and everything because of the Pitocin.
Yeah.
And when they told me that, I was like really devastated and like defeated, you know, because I felt like I was having all these contractions all day for like nothing, quote unquote, you know. And so they told me, the doctor told me the plan, and he was like, so we're going to do Cervidil again, which they had told me before that that could be the case, you know, but of course I was hoping not. And I was just really like upset. Like I did not want to have to go through that again because like I said, it was my least favorite part. And then I was worried, what if it doesn't work again? And then I end up having to have a C-section anyways. And part of me, I asked the doctor like, well, should I just have a C-section? Even though that's not what I wanted, you know, I was just, you know, a little defeated
of course.
At that. And he was really encouraging and said, you know, I really discourage you from scheduling a C-section because there's no reason you can't have this baby vaginally. He's like, your body is capable of it.
Wow.
And it just needs more time. And so I thought that was really, you know, that really helped me. And that was such a nice thing to hear, is that, you know, my body was capable. And especially being plus size, you know, I think that there's a stigma sometimes that our bodies aren't capable, but you know, they are. And so that was really nice.
Yeah. And people are told that with one baby, right? And you were told that you are capable with two babies. And I just think that that is so beautiful. And I'm sure it was empowering in that moment of vulnerability of, well, maybe I should just have a cesarean birth, and to have this provider be like, you can do this. Oh, I got chills. That's wonderful.
Yes. So, yeah, that was my only other time of kind of thinking about a cesarean, and voluntarily at that. But thankfully, everyone encouraged me not to. Everyone, you know, of course, respected what I wanted. And my husband was very supportive, thankfully. And, you know, he was like, I was like, do you think I should just ask for a C-section? And he was like, well, you really wanted to do this vaginally, but if you have changed your mind, I will support you, you know, no matter what. And my mom was also, you know, encouraging as well. But thankfully, I decided I might as well try, right?
Yeah.
And so we did the Cervidil again, and I got my new nurse in the morning, and she literally was like an angel.
Aww.
I loved her so much. And I don't know how my experience would have gone if I had had a different nurse, maybe. I mean, they were all amazing that I had, but she was just like almost like another mom. Like she reminded me of my mom. And that was so nice. And she checked me in the morning, and I had, you know, introduced myself and told her that, you know, I had a really rough night because I had to be constantly monitored with the twins, and it just was not comfortable, of course. And she was just right away reassuring me. And when she checked how, you know, dilated I was, I finally was 2 centimeters.
Yay!
Yeah. And so, you know, it was really emotional because I was like, oh, good, it worked. And so then, of course, you know, it's still early days, but they started me on Pitocin again. And, you know, I started progressing. And a few hours later, my doctor came in and checked on me. And I was so thankful because it actually happened to be my OB.
Aw.
Yeah. So she was there, and that made me feel even more encouraged because I knew that if for some reason baby B was breech, you know, that we had still a chance of a vaginal delivery.
Yeah.
With her, which was great. Yeah. So she came in and she, you know, checked me, and I was like 4 centimeters at that point. So I was like progressing pretty well.
Yeah.
And they decided to break my water. I asked them before they did it. I was like, okay, well, you know, I can get my epidural now, right? And they were like, yeah, of course. And they said, we'll put that right in. And they wanted to go ahead and do it, you know, before I got my epidural, just because they were already, you know, checking my cervix. And so they wouldn't have to do that again, which if you've ever had that, you know, it can not be the most comfortable thing. Mm-hmm. And so I agreed. And unfortunately, it took 2 hours to get my epidural because literally everyone was having babies exactly on the same schedule. So we all wanted an epidural at the same time.
Oh, I bet. You're like, wait. I don't want to be at the bottom of the list. Like, yeah. And with Pitocin, you're having contractions on top of contractions. Like, there's not the natural break we get for an unmedicated labor. And you're probably exhausted, too, because you hadn't slept well. And you'd been through a lot in that amount of time.
Yes, it was really, it was really intense. My nurse, this is where she came in, and she just, you know, just stayed so positive but encouraging at the same time, you know, and like helped me, kept switching into different positions and like was like, it's fine. I'll refix the monitors. Don't worry. You do what you need to do to be comfortable. And I, you know, I don't know what I would have done without her or, you know, my husband too. And my mom was there, thankfully. And I just remember every time the door would open, I would be like, okay, is it them? Is it them? Are they coming? And I just had to keep telling myself that towards the end there, I was just like, okay, they're going to open the door and they're going to come in. They're going to open the door and they're going to come in. So that was, you know, the most probably, you know, toughest 2 hours in terms of the actual labor. But again, everything was progressing nicely. And my mom told me after the fact that the nurse kept like giving her looks like, I don't know if the epidural is going to get here in time, which I didn't know, thankfully, the whole time. But yeah, they kept asking. I was like, am I still going to be able to get it? Like, is this okay? But thankfully, they were able to give me the epidural, which I was really nervous of how I was going to be able to be still because, you know, I was having those intense contractions, like you said, one on top of another. And I was like, how in the world are you supposed to be still, you know, during this? And the nurse just told me, like, you'll find a way. And she's like, I'll be right here with you. And of course, she helped me, like, hold me steady and helped me breathe. And I was able to. It took 2 different techs to do my epidural. Not tech, anesthesiologist. There we go. That's the word. To do my epidural, which at first, again, made me nervous. And I was like, oh, no, don't tell me I can't have one.
Yeah.
They were just being really cautious and wanted to make sure that they placed it in the best, you know, possible spot, which they never mentioned my weight. But I had had a previous spinal tap before. And that during that process, they had mentioned my weight and said that, you know, that can make it harder to find the right position.
Yeah.
And so they didn't really mention it with the anesthesiologist, but I had known that this was something that could happen. And so I guess I wasn't really surprised, but the second guy came in and he got a great placement and it worked. And thankfully I didn't have any side effects from it afterwards, which I'm so fortunate with that too. But yeah, after my epidural, I was feeling good and I was like, okay. And I had progressed to like, I guess they checked me and I was like 7.5 centimeters. And then not even like an hour later, my nurse had come back in and I actually had a student trainee nurse that was with her too. And she was also amazing.
Aww.
And, you know, they kept saying like, oh, thank you for letting her be a part of this. And I was like, okay, whatever. Thank you for, you know, helping me. And I guess I didn't really realize at the time that she was literally still in college. I thought she was just like a nurse that was like new to the hospital. But that was still fun.
What an incredible experience for her, man. Wow. That's so cool.
Yes. Well, especially because they had gone to another room at this point when I was at 7.5. The last they checked, and they were covering for another nurse, and they had looked under the sheet, and a head was there.
Wow.
Yeah. So they got to deliver that baby, and then they came back in and checked on me. And then after that, I was like, oh gosh, because I started really feeling the pressure, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh gosh, is there a head there? Because then I was just petrified there was just going to be a head popping out without us knowing, which I know that's not the norm. But so then they checked me again and I was like 9. So she, you know, contacted the doctor. And because I was having a twin vaginal delivery, I still had to go to the OR to push and deliver. And so it's not like I could just, you know, push and the doctor just had to come in. They had to literally assemble like the huge team. So they started getting everything ready. And the way I was progressing so fast, they were all like, okay, we're going right now. We're getting the OR prepped, you know. And my doctor was finishing delivering another baby because, like I said, everyone was having babies at the exact same time.
Was there a full moon?
I don't know. There's something. So, and then I was getting a little anxious because I was like, I really feel pressure. Like I was like pushing without, you know, meaning to.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were checking me and having me do practice pushes. And she's like, I can feel her head like sliding down like further into the, you know, birth canal. And they actually let my husband, well, they asked me, of course, if it was okay. But then they asked him if he wanted to feel. And he got to feel during a contraction.
Wow.
Her head moved down. Yeah. So that was cool. And so did the, you know, student nurse. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. Whatever. Everybody check. At that point, you know, you just don't care anymore.
Right.
Yeah. So that was really good. And she kept telling me, she's like, well, that's great. These are like really good, you know, progressive pushes. You know, obviously your body's doing something when you're pushing. So that's a really good sign. And she told, you know, my doctor was like, okay, good. And I got to 10 centimeters. And she was like, okay, well, let's check her and have her labor down while we finish getting everything ready, which I'm really glad because I wanted to be able to labor down, which if, you know, I'm not sure if I'll explain it the best, but if you don't know, it has to do with like your station. Mm-hmm. And I believe you want to be in a positive number, right? Mm-hmm. And so it can be from like -3 to +3. And I was at like a +1, which is okay. But my doctor wanted me to labor down to closer to a 2 or a 3. And I was able to do that. And what really helped me was, you know, using a peanut ball and moving positions, but also my nurse kept doing that like assisted pushing, I guess, where like she would check my cervix and like I'd push during a contraction a little bit and she would feel her moving. So that was good. And then they rolled me in while my husband was getting ready. And I kept telling him, I was like, I can't stop pushing. Like it's happening. And it was a little overwhelming at first when I got into the OR because there were just so many people.
Yeah, I bet.
And I'm sure I didn't even see all the people. My husband said that there was like at least like 25 to 30.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Because there's going to be a team for baby A and baby B and then you too. So yeah, that adds up quick, but I can only imagine. And sometimes when people are moved into a different location, it can stall labor too, but it sounded like you were well on, you were getting ready to birth that first baby too.
Yeah. So thankfully, yeah, it didn't stall me or anything. And yeah, and I had to have the anesthesiologist and everything just in case it did lead to a cesarean.
Of course.
So that's why there was also extra people on top of just having the teams for the twins and me, of course. And then, like I said, I had a student, so that was like an extra person. And the light, if you ever have been in an OR, they're very intense. And you're just kind of like laying there looking at the lights and it's a little, everyone's doing stuff, putting on gowns and getting stuff ready.
Did it feel really cold too?
No, I was burning up.
Okay.
I'm sure maybe it was cold in there, but even my doctor was like really sweating and because of the lights. So I don't know if that's why, because the lights were on us like really intensely, but I was burning up and they actually gave me like a fan to hold while I was pushing.
Wow.
They did have me on my back, which at first I was a little like, I guess not against it, but you know, you read that that's not necessarily the best position sometimes.
Yeah.
But they were open to changing it. But honestly, I didn't personally need to change because, like you heard, things were already progressing when I was practice pushing.
Yeah, that baby was ready to be born.
Yes, absolutely. So once I started pushing, I don't know how long it took me. I think I did maybe 5 pushes to deliver baby A.
Mm.
She really just was ready to come. And then after, I don't know, it just felt like incredible. I mean, if you've ever given birth, then maybe you got to experience this. If you've delivered vaginally, I know it's not maybe amazing for everyone in that moment, but I don't know, it just felt like a huge, tremendous like relief, but also, of course, just knowing that she was okay.
Yeah.
Was good. I didn't get to see her right away, but only because I did not have time to really see her because they basically, I did tear. And so they were fixing that. So they had me try to like hold off for a few contractions while they quickly like patched that up. And they also were doing the ultrasound, which I did not even feel them do the ultrasound. And I had to deliver my placenta.
Right. Oh my goodness.
Something.
Yeah. You're not only delivering 2 babies, you're delivering 2 placentas too, because they had their own sacs and their own placentas. Wow.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I didn't know exactly how that would work. Like, I didn't know if they both would come out at the end or what. I didn't know how that would work. But they did come one after like each baby.
Yeah.
So I also did that. So there was a few minutes, you know, of downtime where I wasn't really pushing. And I remember the doctor being like, oh, you're going to feel like a new woman in just a little bit. And I was like, I already do.
Yeah.
And they were all laughing. And she's like, I've never heard anyone say that in the middle of labor before. And I was like, well, you push out one baby after having 2 in there and you would feel the same way. Yeah. So it was just really, you know, positive overall. Then they were telling me that they were ready for me to start pushing baby B, and that I was like, oh, she's in the right position. They're like, yep, you're good to go. Which of course, this is where a lot of twin pregnancies, either it could stall again.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the baby may not be in the right position, or there may be some sort of distress. But fortunately, I didn't have that. And I just started pushing again. And everyone was like a cheerleader and telling me, you know, they could see her head and that I was doing great. And she, you know, was born, and it was a total, let's see, I think I only pushed for a total of 20 minutes for both of you.
You're a rock star, and those little girls are too. Wow.
Yeah. So I was really fortunate, and everyone was like, you did amazing. Like, I can't believe, I felt like I had like a little crowd like cheering me on, which was really nice.
Oh, the energy must have felt so incredible in that moment.
It really did. And then I told my husband, I was like, go see them, because he was still by me, because he didn't want to leave me without, you know, I guess making sure I was okay. And I'm like, I'm fine, go see them.
Aww.
And luckily they were both good. So baby A is Eliza, and she was 6 pounds, 6 ounces.
Wow.
And baby B is Clara, and she was 6 pounds. So they both had really good weights.
Yeah.
For twins. And they didn't have to have any time in the NICU.
Wow.
And yeah, so it was really good. And they, you know, did of course have to check both my blood sugar and their sugar levels, because I did have gestational diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
But luckily I was able to give them colostrum and, you know, try to breastfeed them within the first, you know, hour or so. And their blood sugars were fine the entire time.
Wow.
And so we didn't have to do anything more with that. And mine was also good without any medicine or anything. So overall, it was like really positive. And we were all doing well. And it was just crazy how fast it went. And luckily, my nurse, I gave birth like right towards the end of shift, like in the last hour of shift. And so she was able to stay and be there with me.
Aww.
And that was really special too, because she really helped me to just keep going and to be motivated. And everyone, I guess it is so rare maybe to deliver twins vaginally, but
yeah,
you know, every time I would tell a doctor or someone found out, they were like, whoa, great job, that's amazing. And for me, it just, you know, that's just my experience. But I definitely wanted to share, because I know that when I was researching not only plus size pregnancy, but also like twin pregnancy and twin plus size pregnancy, you know, there's just not a lot of necessarily super positive stories. And so I definitely wanted to share my side of it.
Well, I'm so glad you did, Sarah. And it wasn't just that it happened. You worked for it. You worked to find a great care team. You mentally prepared for it. You did all you could to have a healthy outcome for you and your babies. Like, this didn't just happen. You made it happen. And I'm so proud of you. And clearly, like, who was in that room and your care team made such a big impact too. And so that's something to take away from your story, is if you have a nurse that is just not feeling like the right fit, you can also ask, a loved one to ask for the charge nurse and see if they can swap out nurses, because we do hear so often, like, yeah, we focus on finding a care provider that's the right fit, but that care provider is not in there, you know, off and on for hours. They come in and check on you, and then they're in at the end. So finding that nurse, sounds like she made a really big impact in supporting you through it. And you were prepared. You knew what you wanted mentally, and you knew that birth could unfold in many different ways, but that you wanted that vaginal birth. And I think that mindset is so incredibly important as well. And oh my gosh, what a treat. I loved your story so much, and I'm so honored you shared it here on the podcast. And I've got to believe that there are some twin parents listening right now that are like, man, maybe I could do that too. But also there might be someone who's like, nope, that's not for me. I want an elective cesarean. And there's nothing wrong with that either, right? Like, it's whatever you want, and feeling supported throughout and not being made to feel that you can't have a certain outcome because of your size. And you were supported throughout that as well. So what a fantastic story.
Yes, absolutely. And I agree with everything you said there at the end, that no matter how you choose or what makes you feel comfortable, just don't be afraid to advocate for yourself and be informed yourself as well, as best as you can. And, you know, just do what feels good for you.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we end?
The girls are almost 3 months old now, and they're doing really well. And their big brother is also really loving being a big brother and helping with everything.
Aww.
So if you're worried about that transition too, he was 5 when they were born, and he's actually been such a big help. So there's hope for that too. That's the last thing, I guess I would say.
How are you doing?
Yeah, physically, I had a really quick recovery as well. I guess given that I only had a first degree tear, which is still a tear, so yeah. I still had to be, you know, extra careful. But other than that, I didn't really push for that long. So I was exhausted from having multiple days of induction and not sleeping great.
Yeah.
But other than that, I wasn't actually, you know, physically exhausted from the pushing process. And everyone was really helpful. I think because I already had a therapist and I was already on Zoloft throughout my whole pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
I was already aware of what I needed to look out for in terms of, you know, postpartum anxiety and postpartum depression. Yeah. And I did definitely get more anxious. I mean, having one baby, I'm sure, is difficult enough, you know, in the middle of the night when you're not sleeping.
Right.
But having two, and then even with my husband helping me nonstop, like, we both couldn't get a break unless someone else stepped in, because they would just take, you know, they'd both be crying at the same time. And I mean, you know, that was hard. So I just made conscious effort to talk with my therapist and just my doctor, and I just asked for an up in my medicine because I noticed I wasn't feeling exactly like myself.
Good.
And I was feeling definitely more anxious. And so once I did that, and I got some much needed rest, I felt a lot better. And since about week two, I definitely have a better handle of things, and every day is getting a little bit easier to manage, you know, on my own. So there's hope if you're in the very early days.
Yeah.
Post birth, or you're about to, that, you know, it's going to be hard, but it will, you know, get more normal, and don't be afraid to reach out to people.
Yes. I love how you were like, I'm not quite feeling like myself. I think I need to adjust my meds, and that you talked to your doctor and you knew what to look out for with postpartum depression. I'm so proud of you for being so proactive with that, because it's so, so important. You're amazing.
Thank you.
Well, thank you again, Sarah, for being on the show and sharing your story. Definitely head to plusmommy.com to check out Sarah's gorgeous maternity photos and see more resources from this episode. And everyone, take good care. Until next time, goodbye.
Bye. Thank you.